Hey, it's John. Did you know a quick finger prick at home can unlock over 180 insights to slow aging and boost health? I tried True Diagnostics True Age plus True Health Test, and it gave me way more information than a regular checkup. True Health checks biomarkers like vitamins, gut health, inflammation, and toxins. True Age reveals your biological age, organ ages, and aging pace with tailored tips to optimize. My results? My body shows signs of being a few months younger than my actual age. Fitness age is 5 years below my actual age, with a strong grip and gait, but a slightly fast aging pace that I'm trying to tweak with better sleep and stress management. It's backed by Ivy League scientists. Just prick, mail, and get a clear report in 2 to 4 weeks. Serious about longevity? Visit TrueDiagnostic.com. Use code Harris for 20% off your order or subscription. That's TrueDiagnostic.com, code H-A-R-R-I-S. Your future self will thank you.
It was like nameless, faceless accounts that were over based in India, coming after the business, writing bad reviews. And then they found my wife and they started sending her threatening messages, I should say, extortion emails to me. And about 3 a.m. in the morning on Sunday night, I was like, I was alone. I was scared. I was like, and my wife was freaking out, and I'm like, all right, I'm deleting. I'm just going to lock everything down, which is obviously ignorant and too little too late.
Welcome once again to the Conversations That Matter podcast. I'm your host, John Harris. We have with us a special guest today who has not been on the podcast before, but he is being talked about on the internet because there was a story just yesterday in The Blaze. It came out. The title of the story is Church Joins Persecution of Texas Business Owner Who Criticized H-1B Visas. And I have had the privilege of talking to Daniel Keene, who is at the center of this story. We've actually been talking, I don't know now, maybe for a few months, just sort of back and forth about this kind of a situation. And I'm really happy to see some coverage of this. And I'm going to let Daniel share his story since he's the focus of the article. So welcome to the podcast, Daniel. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
I think this is going to be an encouraging story. I was encouraged just from the standpoint that this is getting coverage and also your bravery, because it's so rare to hear of people who are in these churches or Christian institutions that are willing to go public after an ordeal like you've been through. And I think the purpose of that is to warn people, to let people know this is what the leadership is doing. And in this case, I'll let you talk about it, but it seems to me it's importing extra biblical things to discipline you, essentially, and using laws that aren't in the Bible, but are imported from more liberal political instincts to really try to punish you and make an example of you to some extent, perhaps. So I want to maybe start at the beginning and just let you introduce yourself to everyone. It says you're a small business owner. What do you do? What led you to this particular church? And I'm actually blanking on the name. We've talked about it so many times. What's the name of the church?
Oh, Trails, the Trails Church. Yeah.
The Trails Church. That's it. Yeah. Where some people might not recognize. So Matt Boswell is a pastor there. And he has that famous song, His Mercy Is More. So you might have heard that song, but anyway. But no, please plug your business, though.
Yeah. Oh, it's Boundaries Coffees. This is the name of my business. We've got 2 locations. It's a retail, like, drive-through shop here. And we've got one in Prosper and another location in Little Elm. So just around north part of the DFW Metroplex.
Very nice. So if you're in the DFW area and you want to support Daniel, then check those coffee places out. I know my wife, if we lived down there, she would be going there. She's a big coffee person and loves those little kind of hole in the wall coffee places. So very cool. This is, you know, your day job, but you have a ministry background. So maybe talk about that a little bit.
Yeah. So my wife and I both, we're actually high school sweethearts. We're from here in the Metroplex. Went to the University of Arkansas, and after graduating there, I went on staff with CRU, which was formerly Campus Crusade for Christ. And I was a supported worker, essentially, sharing the gospel with international students at the U of A. So if you're familiar with University of Arkansas, there's a very large international student population, most of that coming from the Fulbright scholarship. Senator Fulbright back in the 50s, post-World War II, put together a massive international scholarship. And so the U of A presented a good opportunity to share the gospel with people who came from closed countries or otherwise would be extremely hard to reach through missionaries. And so we had a good opportunity to share the gospel with them there and send them back as Lord willing, as Christians in the faith, back to their country. But if not, at least as people who have an intellectual understanding of the gospel and potentially, hopefully, some fruit coming from that in the future. So we loved it. We lived up there for 9 years. We moved back to open the business here and to be closer to family. And when we moved back, we sought out the Trails Church. We came from a Nine Marks church. We were familiar with Matt and his music, which we loved. And we were looking for a church that preached the gospel clearly. And we loved like the theologically rich songs. In DFW, that's kind of an anomaly. You've got a lot of non-denominational churches that maybe theological emphasis in their music is not a major concern. So we're excited. It lined up well to be at the Trails as well as with the business where we need the business to be. And so we picked a place to live and joined, met with Matt beforehand, loved him, really, really loved the town. And then came, when we came down, a couple months after that, we joined the church and got involved and loved it. To your point, like on the ministry background, like I'm a Southern Seminary student, online. I was like heavily involved in the church as just a lay member, not even a deacon necessarily. I was leading Bible studies. We led I'd say like one of the larger community groups of the church. We had 16 couples. And then I was coordinating, services as like, for the welcome team. So greeting new members, getting them connected, all that stuff. And then running the coffee, of course, that was my job too. So,
right. Yeah, that's important. Yeah. So I do need to just sort of focus on this. I want to highlight it that you, because I think it's important, you were working with international students, preaching the gospel, and
yeah,
sounds like discipling as well, so that they would go back to their countries and make a difference for the kingdom of God, which I so respect. It's sort of ironic, I suppose, that the charge against, well, what is the actual charge? Do they have a word? Is it just racism? What's the charge that they've leveled at you?
Yeah. So I asked for it multiple times, like in writing, just so I could give a response. I was, every time we left the meeting, I was a little confused at what exactly, because on one hand there would be, this is the charge. On the other hand, we'd spend so much time focused on some other elements of the discussion. But officially, it's racist, like race, not loving my neighbor through like a racial animosity towards Indians, as reflected by essentially my tone of my ex post and in general approach.
I'm going to show that now so people understand what you're talking about. This is the post, the video that you put on X. Okay, now that everyone's seen this video, what can you tell me about this? What were you thinking when you posted it?
Yeah, like, so the post and the video was not, it was something that has been a growing conviction for me since I've moved back here to DFW, seeing the change and the effects of the immigration policies have had, specifically in this region, really in this like basically 5 mile radius of my house. But yeah, the video. So what you saw on the video is actually there's a celebration that day, a Hindu celebration where they worship Ganesh, and so you can hear like the beating of the drums, and they've got basically like a table, they've got a Ganesh idol on the table, and they're just drumming drums, blocking the road. And so it was actually my wife was going to just pick up McDonald's for my 4-year-old, and she was like, you know, this is crazy. These policies are affecting, like, I can't even drive down the road right now. And so the post in the comments on the post was something like, typical view in my neighborhood outside Dallas. We have to end the H-1B visas now. I want my kids to grow up in America, not India. And that line was the main concern, I want my kids to grow up in America, not India, that the elders took as particularly concerning, and that they felt like was not loving towards my neighbor over that.
So I want to maybe take a step back here. Was there previous issues between you and the church, or issues that you knew of from other people that concerned social justice or alleged accusations of racism, disciplinary issues that were similar to yours?
Yeah, that's a good question. So the, no, not necessarily. I was on great terms, you know, with the elders, and for me, like, this is kind of the lesson for me is, in a lot of this is how ignorant I was of these issues. To me, I, you know, what I've told the elders several times is, like, I chose the church, on the primary issues. It's a Baptist church, preached the gospel, preached expositionally, sang theologically rich songs, and was somewhat congregational. I wish it was more congregational, but I, you know, beggars can't be choosers. I was happy with what I got. And so I knew that there was left leaning elders. It wasn't really a concern to me at the time, because I wanted to choose those weren't primary issues to me necessarily. And that's been kind of my complaint in all this is, like, I don't expect anyone to have this conviction that I do about this specific policy issue, or to even, like, be remotely as educated or, you know, have a thought about the dynamics of this policy. I just want to be a member of the church and be kind of left alone to have my view if I'd like to. But it was them that made it a primary issue. And that was the concern. So no, there was no, like, there wasn't like a, oh, red, you know, looking back now, hindsight's obviously 2020, and I've some stuff has come to light, but no, at the time it was not, there was not, you know, any major concerns. I got along well with the elders, and I was getting teaching opportunities and really enjoying it.
When did you join the Trails Church?
It would have been like January of 2022.
Okay. So this is after 2020. I don't know if you were aware of how they handled those issues.
The only thing I was aware on that was that they continued to meet, and they were not, the information I got about that when I came down here was that they took the church continuing to gather very seriously, and they weren't willing to, like, go online or anything, I think, ever. And I think
that's part of the ecclesiology, it sounds like.
Yeah.
Good ecclesiology. On the racial stuff from 2020, were you not aware, or just they
just wasn't aware?
Yeah.
Wasn't aware. Yeah.
So here's the question, and because I think there's people in similar situations that it really does hit them between the eyes, and they're just like, they weren't expecting it. And I do want to get into the actual issue and maybe the nuts and bolts of it, but I just, before doing that, you know, I think it's important to take away any lessons that you might have, that if you could talk to yourself back then, you know, what would you tell yourself that were maybe red flags to look out for?
Yeah. So, gosh, what a great question. There's a lot to take from that. The number one kind of lesson that I've kind of been laughing about is that like adage, the old adage, it's like, you may not care about politics, but it cares about you. And it's like, this may not be an important issue to you, but it's going to be forced kind of on your plate. And so there's that, you know, unfortunately, you're going to be thrust into the issues of your day in God's sovereignty. Like there's going to be challenges you have to face. You're not going to pick them out. They're going to come to you. So there's that. There's some red flags, like in preaching. I think, you know, looking back on it, you want a church that is preaching, addressing maybe sin directly and not necessarily addressing every cultural like issue of the day. For me, I don't know how you feel about that, but at least like naming sin. So thinking back on the issues, there's a lot of like discussion about sin broadly, or maybe we use the word S-I-N, you know, sin in the pulpit, which to me from growing up in a non-denominational church was a huge step up. But now realize that, but there wasn't teeth to like the sermon in confronting and dealing with like actual sin in the pews. Right. It was just very like, sin is this sort of like, sort of out there and not, something that's actually, amidst, our surroundings and amidst the people in the church. So
do you think the church was, the style of the church, the way they ran church, was attempting to cater to, perhaps we'll say the surrounding community, but in a way that bent the truth a little bit in order to do it, or massaged, the truth of the Bible so that it would be more palatable?
So like Matt, he's definitely like a Tim Keller disciple on his approach politically and like dealing with, and to me, like politics is basically just, when you're dealing with like politics in the pew, you're really just dealing with the application of like the whole counsel of God to the life of the congregants, like outside the walls of the church. Right. Or something like politics is relational.
Sublime, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's Christian ethics sublime. Yeah. So, like, I think that there's a, you know, in the most charitable view possible, like there's definitely a major tendency to not take a stand on anything unless you absolutely like have to. Like it's maybe the approach is like, unless it's in the passage, like it says it verbatim right there in the passage, like say dealing with like sexual morality or something, or even in idolatry, like there's a tendency to kind of water that down of like, well, we're all idols. So this was something I brought up to the elders in the meetings, was like, well, I really just like, as a Christian, as a father, I don't want my daughter like riding her bike around my neighborhood and like she's dodging idols like on the streets. It's just not, that's not what I want from her, for her.
Like
life.
Actual idols. Like,
yeah,
literal.
Yeah. Literal, like literal drum beating. Like we're pouring milk on idols. Like I don't want that.
They're doing Hindu pagan practices on the street, outside the house. Like that's, I just wanted people to kind of,
yeah. Yeah. I'm not talking about medicine Buddha on the porch. Like, okay, you know, that's one thing.
Right.
I'm talking about the streets blocked and there's a Ganesh sitting in the middle of the road. And actually with any reasonable amount of this is, that's a video I took. I think that's why it was effective, was it was very candid. Or my wife took, and you know, but it was a very candid shot. She was just sending it to me. She didn't know I was gonna post it. there's videos that like the Indian community post of themselves, right? So you can find all sorts of stuff of like, which, you know, I can supply, of even more public, more like where they've, the idolatry is not even remotely like shameful or something, that needs to be like hidden in the home or whatever. It's approved and celebrated in the community. And so you'll see it on the street corner in Dallas, Texas with, you know, the same thing, dancing and drum beating and celebrating Ganesh. But to your point, going back to your question, like that's something I brought up to the elders, is like I just, as a Christian, like I abhor what's evil and I want to, you know, cling to what's good. And like, I don't want that. And that's kind of where I'm coming from, because a lot of the criticism is, you're not loving your neighbor. And I'm like, well, I'm loving like, well, first off, I'm loving my children, like, and but I'm also loving, like, which neighbor are we talking about? Like, are we talking, like, we're talking about the neighbor that's like being like replaced by others, or, you know, what are we saying? So my criticism of that was, and the feedback was, well, we're all idolaters in the heart. I'm like, okay, yes. Like, when Christ in the Sermon on the Mount talks about, say, for instance, like, breaking the command, thou shalt not, you know, murder. He applies the spirit of that law and that command into like anger and into your heart. That does not mean that like you are guilty of sin and worthy of hell because of that. But it doesn't mean you're like, that's not the same as sin in the heart bearing fruit in the hands, like leading to murder. Those are very different things. We don't just go, well, everyone's a murderer, so like, yeah, just murder away.
Right. Well, yeah, it's the irony of the whole thing is, I mean, obviously there's a difference there, first of all, that when you love, I mean, the Gospel Coalition used to have articles. It's like, if you love your family too much, you love your wife a little too much, right? It could be idolatry. Well, I mean, you're not blocking the streets with literal idols that are on public display. When it's pointed out, you're usually ashamed of it. If it's obvious to others, and you're not, other people aren't joining you in this practice to publicly kind of put it in the frame of view of people. But the bigger irony to me is that you were put in a process of discipline here. Yeah. And it, like, could you not say without about any sin, like, we're all just racists, right? And I don't even buy that that's a necessarily a sin category. Yeah. Because I think that's you know, it depends what you mean by the word, but generally, and the way they're applying the term, it sounds like it's more of a you're against the liberal order and you want a more intact, homogeneous society that's more influenced by Christianity, that actually is more American. And so these are things that build trust and they're good between people. Anyway, if you believe in that, then you're somehow sinning. Well, if that's, I don't buy that that's a sin, but if that's a sin, then don't we all have that in our heart? So why discipline you? Like, right? Why shouldn't they all be disciplined? Why shouldn't everyone, right? If you're going to just flatline everything, we should just all be disciplined. But obviously, there's a hierarchy of sin here.
Yeah.
Because you were targeted. And I want to explore that a little. Like, what was the first step here? You just posted the video and got a text. How did this all develop?
Yeah, the way it unfolded. So I posted the video, I think it was like Saturday evening. And Sunday morning, it was like going viral. And I started getting like, I'm sitting in church and like, I'm getting, actually was serving, and I was getting like, you know, the death threats and the emails, cause I got doxxed at some point that night.
Were you anonymous?
No, but like my business, I should say my business, like my information, my email, my phone number, all that stuff was leaked.
Right.
I mean, I had 300 followers and like, I'm not a public figure, so I wasn't exactly like locked down. You could pretty easily find my LinkedIn and go from there. So, that was my mistake, I should say. And I used to be critical of people who are anonymous online, like, and, you know, I'm not going to go anonymous or anything, but, now I realize maybe it's not totally out of just pure cowardice, or something. So, but yeah, it unfolded like Saturday afternoon. It kept getting kind of worse and worse. Had a couple people like I reached out to and they kind of counseled me on it. I didn't want to delete the post. And, cause it was having like the effect, I wanted attention to the issue. Like it's real, a real policy. It has real effects on my life, on my children, on my family, on my friends. And so I was like, I'll take the arrows. It'll be fine. I want the attention on the issue. And then it was about Sunday night. That's when they started attacking the business. So, people aren't familiar with the story. Like there was like a, basically an Indian bot attack. It was like nameless, faceless, accounts that were over based in India coming after the business, writing bad reviews, Yelp reviews, Google reviews, sending messages, all that stuff. And then they found my wife and they started sending her like, you know, threatening messages, I should say, extortion emails to me. And about 3 a.m. in the morning on Sunday night, I was like, I couldn't, I was alone. I was scared. I was like, and my wife was freaking out, and I'm like, all right, I'm deleting it. I'm just going to lock everything down, which is obviously ignorant and too little too late. And so then in the morning, about mid-afternoon, I just received a text from Matt or one of the elders, and they asked if I could get on a call in a few hours. And I said, yes, we got on that call. And,
they were calling to see if you were okay. Right. All these threats, and they wanted to encourage you. No,
that's what you would hope. You'd be sorely let down. So yeah, the call was essentially like you've sinned against your neighbor. We've received an email saying that you used racially charged language online. And I was locked. And so I let one of the elders requested to follow me. I let him in. I was like, you know, like I don't have anything to hide. The accusation was racism in the heart, like on the post, the tone of the post, particularly the combination, like the video and the statement of, I want my kids to grow up in America, not India. And I told him, like, God has given me a weird, stubborn backbone on these things, because I know that I'm not going to recant on that post. I don't think I sinned. And I know that even on that statement, I want my kids to grow up in America, not India, I'm like, in the irony, they agree. Like, everyone agrees. Like, we're all in the same boat. We want to live here. Even the Indian immigrants, no one has a problem with that statement. It was the combat. They felt like the tone of the post. So they would affirm, they kept affirming, like, we affirm the, you're fine with the policy that you want to end H-1B visas. You want to oppose even the legal immigration. They would also spend, you know, an hour plus criticizing that view. But in the end, it was technically, that's fine. It's how you expressed that view and the amount of people that saw that expression. That was
so
the concern.
That's a little unclear, and maybe that's how they communicated. So they criticized the post because they agree with the H-1B policy, or at least they don't like opposition to it. But then in the end, they came around to your view or said it was
on one hand, they would say that you can have this view. We don't agree with you. And they would spend an hour debating me on the issue or saying you should just welcome everybody. You should just welcome everybody.
Matt Boswell included.
Yeah. And mostly there's two other elders. I kind of knew I was in trouble, actually. The two elders that were brought in, I knew. I had heard a little bit of like stories. I knew they were the most left-leaning elders we had. And so I knew, and they weren't my friends. There are other elders that like I would consider friends, or like maybe people who I would think would view me in the most charitable light. And they weren't on the call. And so that was kind of a red flag to me.
Did they come to help at any point in any of this?
No, one of them took a phone call once. He was out of town most of the time. I wouldn't call him like a conservative or like a right-leaning person, but at least like somebody I've had dinner with and lunch with a couple times. And, he took my call. He didn't return a call after that. I texted him once. He didn't respond. Like he just showed up at the next meeting. They would not communicate with me except for like official verbal, communication, whether by phone or in the meetings, like in the physical meetings at the church. They would only text to schedule a meeting, which was my concern.
To summarize this, and I want to keep going through the details, but meeting one, which sounds like that was a few hours. It was a long call.
Hour and a half, hour 45. Yeah.
And how many calls were there in the course?
There's two calls. So you got a call Monday, about an hour and a half, a call Wednesday, about an hour and a half. Then important to the story, Charlie was killed. Charlie Kirk was shot a couple hours after that call hung up. And then a meeting scheduled on Friday night for Sunday afternoon. That's when my wife showed up. That was another 2 hours. I thought everything was done. And then the next Sunday was the, you need to find another church. You need to go to a different church.
Okay. So to summarize the issue here then, and I think this is important because look, I can, you know, if you were saying we all these people who are different should be killed, right? Or yeah, if you were saying I hate living with these people and I want them all thrown in prison, or if, I mean, we could go on and on, right, with different scenarios that would actually probably fit the definition of maybe not loving your neighbor. Of course, if they're doing crimes, then you know, maybe they do need to go to prison, but what you were witnessing wasn't criminal under the laws that we have. I don't think it was. Maybe blocking traffic is, but it's certainly against God's law. They're doing something evil. And it's opposing that would seem to me to be in line with what biblical prophets did. If you even got out of the car and said what you're doing is wrong, that would be something akin to what biblical prophets did. That's Elijah, right? So this is the thing I suppose that I'm a little surprised at, and I think maybe other people reading the story are having the same surprise, that there's no commendation for this, because what you're complaining about is the idolatry of Hindu people, and obviously it's a completely different culture. You have a different language and just different ways of living, but you know, at the end of the day, they're doing something that's against your not just Christian sensibilities, but against what you believe to be right before God. And and this they twist into, you are somehow just not loving them. I just find it staggering a little bit. It's a head scratcher to go that direction, unless you're operating on a very woke left type of paradigm, which it sounds like that's what's going on. They want multiculturalism. They want some kind of like social pluralism out in public. And if you don't affirm that, I mean, that's what it sounds like to me. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're not wrong at all. There's a lot to that. That was kind of why I was like not willing to like recant. I deleted the post. The post is down. But I wasn't willing to recant on the post because of that conviction. Now, I affirmed to them, like, I don't expect people to have this like conviction that I've developed over like a few years of living here and kind of dealing with the repercussions of these policies, watching the Hindu temple be built and another mosque and another mosque and another mosque, in country town, Texas. I mean, like,
you're losing your home.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. And I don't, so like, I'm not, my conviction with them is like, I don't expect, I'm not mad at you for not like vocalizing this necessarily. I just want to be like, I don't want to be charged with sin for saying this publicly. I am loving them. I'm definitely loving the other members of the church who have voiced to me like frustration and pain and suffering because of the policies, even just on an economic level. And so I think it would be, you know, to me, I'm driven by a love of like literally naming members of the church who have been negatively hit by these policies. I'm driven by an affection for them. And, you know, and you can argue like obviously an affection for the Hindu neighbors who are, you know, to your point, are worshiping an idol and need to be called to repentance and to faith in Christ. And, yeah, I mean, I guess you could argue like I could go up there physically and do that too. That's fine. I do have gospel. Like I work out with before my this gym that kicked me out. I was at another gym, and I was actually one of the only Christians at the entire gym. And I had lunches with other Hindus and shared the gospel with one in particular frequently. And it was driven from a love, some frustration of the negative effects that it's having on people around me. So,
yeah. Well, as far as I'm concerned, you're a patriot, you're a Christian who cares about his family and cares about his friends who are being negatively impacted. The fact that your leaders in the church can't see this, I mean, it's just sad. It's just sad. And it's a prominent church to some extent. So, this process unfolds. They pick this extra biblical charge of not loving your neighbor and applying it to this situation inappropriately. And then what, where does, because in the Bible, the, you know, Matthew 18 process is basically a private confrontation followed by two or more, and then it goes to the congregation, and then they consider you a Gentile and tax gatherer, which is a euphemism for essentially you're outside the fold, not just of the local church. You are outside the fold of Christ. You need to be evangelized, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what happened to you, or did they just say, we don't want you here anymore, leave?
Yeah, so it's a, so in the second second phone call, after I was kind of pretty much immediately pulled from all my leadership positions and stuff, which I was pretty disappointed about. But at the end of the second phone call, I asked them directly. I said, like, am I on the path to church discipline? And what I'm saying with that is, like, to your point, am I on the path to, like, removal and hand it over to Satan? Like, is that how you're viewing this? And the response was, this is church discipline. This is church discipline. If you're asking if you're being removed from the table, i.e. like if you can't take communion on Sunday, no, that's not the case. But if you continue in this, yes. And that was, I mean, there was silence after that, because that, like, I know people have been disciplined by the church for heinous sins. For sexual morality, for, you know, adultery, unrepentant adultery, or whatever, drunken, even unrepentant drunkenness and stuff.
You took the post down. So at this point, is it because you're belligerent in their minds? Like, you're not recanting the post?
Yeah, because I'm not willing to confess that I'm a racist, which I offered, you know, to post clarity online. If this is a matter of, like, people don't understand my view, like maybe it's being misconstrued, I offer the clarity. I'm offering it to you here. And in fact, I said, I'd love to, in that meeting, at the end of that meeting, I said, I would love to offer, like, a written response to you to lay out the nuances of my views and how this is not racial animosity. This is a policy that this is a policy conviction I have on this specific issue in this specific town, is, you know, on this specific topic. And I went to write that on Friday. So that phone call ended with the, like, yes, if you continue. And though they recently, I think they sent me an email saying that they did not, they kind of counter that. I forget how exactly they say it, but that is a cool direct quote from Matt. But I went to write down a response and just give clarity about everything. And I'm like, I'm still confused exactly what the charge is. Like, I don't even know what to address, actually. It's just racism, which I kept, you know, in the media, I'm like, it's just use racial animosity or, like, hatred of someone on the basis of, like, some immutable characteristic, like, even just racism. I don't. And I've offered that. I'm like, I don't know what to do, because I have friends. I actually said, can I bring, I had a couple of friends, Venkat and Shrujan, at my gym. And I said, can they, like, account for, like, my, like, they're Indians. Can they give character witness, like, that I don't hate Indians? And they're not interested in that. They didn't want that. I offered for written response. And so I go to sit down and write it, and so Charlie dies right after that meeting, like an hour after, and had a huge effect on me. Actually, I loved Charlie. To me, was emblematic of, like, a great, you know, public discourse, and, like, on working in terms of the political right. And the fruit of his life was pretty spectacular. And as a 30-year-old, I'm like, right, you know, he's my age, he was 31. And it had a pretty resounding, like, effect for me and for my wife, who was, you know, I think at one point she said to me, like, you agree with Charlie on everything. Like, if he's a concern, if he's they're willing to shoot Charlie, you know, they hate you too. Like, and I'm not okay with that. And we kind of felt an affirmation of, like, man, the public witness of Charlie, his, I would consider him a martyr for the faith, like just publicly sharing the gospel and being being hated for the applying the whole counsel of God to the public sphere and the visceral reaction that came from that, confronting sin openly and publicly. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so that was a fortitude, gave me some fortitude. And then Friday went to write a response, and I got a text from Matt asking to meet on Sunday, which was like a huge inconvenience for us. I'm like, we got two kids. My wife is eight and a half months pregnant. I really don't think she needs to come to this meeting. Like, you know, cause she just watched the kids. I don't know what it has to do with her. And in that text, I said, you know, can you provide, hey, I'm working on the response. Like, can you provide for me in writing, like what exactly the sin is I'm being accused of? I think it's this, but I'm a little confused based on these comments. No, was the response. And I said, I feel very strongly, Matt, like, please,
oh, man,
like, can you give me it in writing? So I know exactly what to address, like with my response and what I'm being asked to like what the repentance is you're asking for from me. Again, we'll talk about it in the meeting. I'm like, okay, fine. So we go to the meeting. That's 2 hours. It's seven elders. And I told my wife going into it, it was seven elders and a staff. I told my wife going into it, I said, the only reason you're coming is because they're going to try to emotionally peel you off and like get you to they're trying to win you over on the emotional argument to convince me to change my mind. And she was like, I got you. It'll be fine. I'm not going to say anything. You know, I support you. She's amazing. Amazing woman. So we sat there and that was part of the challenge was like, even in the meeting, like it's seven elders, popping questions off, you know, one question, a response to them, and another elder, another question and a response, another elder, another question. So there's really no like meat and continuity to the discussion. They brought up two posts from my ex account that they felt like were problematic that just needed like quick clarification. They were not saying what they even thought they were saying. They just were being read in the worst possible light. And I offered, I was like, oh, I'll just delete them. Like, I don't feel strongly about any of that stuff. One of them was about the diversity to your point. It was like, you know, I think the comment was something like, one that's been the most time on was, it's amazing what a little diversity can do to tear down society or something. And I was like, well, I'm responding to a post, actually an article about like, I think an academic paper in the Bronx dealing with like immigrants being put into a neighborhood and the social decay that came from that. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, I'll delete that. No problem. Like, that's not saying what you think I'm saying. I'm not saying ethnic diversity necessarily. I'm saying just like,
there's a specific conditions in a situation that were, yeah, I got it.
Okay. Yeah. Anyways, no big deal. So yeah, 2 hours of that. We had that meeting left basically saying, hey, you know, like, I understand you guys don't want me in the leadership positions. That's fine. I just want to be a member, you know, kind of leave me alone a little bit.
You still wanted to be a member after all that?
My wife is like, hey, that's a little disingenuous you say that. And I'm like, I just wanted to be left alone. Like I wanted the discipline to stop. Like I wanted the process to be over. You know what I mean?
And you wanted the possibility of being a member there still. You wanted that door still open.
I wanted it to be I wanted my own decision about my continuation. This is like our life, right? Like this is 3 years of our life at the church. These are all of our friends.
I get it.
Like, you know, we don't want to just pack up and go. It's not a small thing for us to leave the church. It's a tragedy for us, an absolute tragedy. And no matter how much we disagree with the elders, I actually really truly was willing to sit and disagree with them, or have disagreements with them, sit under them but be with my friends basically. That ended. And then it was a week later, or about midway through that week, actually a member sent me a clip of a podcast from a King's Hall podcast, which I don't listen to King's Hall ever. I don't have a problem necessarily, but I'm not like a King's Hall listener. I'm more of a you listener actually. Conversations.
Well, you asked me, you reached out to me and asked me, you sent me the video and you're like, is there anything wrong with this? And I don't remember what I said, but I basically know. Like, no.
I wanted desperately like just clear perspective on the issue. I mean, I had people who said like, you know, you've sinned in this. And I'm like, well, I don't really not to be like harsh, but I don't really respect, I don't think you've thought through this to the degree where I can like, I trust that you like have a really level head view on this. And so that was why I reached out to you. Yeah. I was like, well, John's like, I think John's like got a great, you know, disposition, and level-headed and has thought through these issues and shares kind of my convictions on some stuff. And so that's why I reached out to you is I swear, if you told me, hey dude, I think it was a nasty post and I think you should take it down. I honestly would have said, okay, cool. Like I'll maybe I've gone too far or something. I've gone off the rails. So
the only thing I can think is if there was a situation, like if you were trying to reach a community and you posted something like that and it was then used against you. So it became kind of a barrier, even though what you're saying is true and you have the right motivation. Yeah. I could see someone reaching out to say on a scale of wisdom and foolishness, this is not a wise thing to do. Why don't you delete it so that you will gain more of a hearing or something like that. I mean, I'm stretching myself to try to even like get in that mindset. Cause I'm very much like in agreement that you even see in the Old Testament, the policies to try to integrate those who are strangers and aliens, or to at least make a separation. You don't want your land overrun. That's kind of like what happens in Samaria, and it's not good. It's a judgment when that kind of thing happens, when the foreigner rules over you. And so I think what you said about loving your neighbors is absolutely true. You were trying to actually obey in a small way, perhaps with the video, not knowing it would go viral, but you're trying to obey that command to love your neighbor by seeking to raise awareness. And if it would get to someone who's a civil magistrate who has some kind of authority over this issue, maybe they could change the policy. That's what I hear you saying. And that's what I think is a standard and very rational, normal Christian response to seeing your society and your home decay in front of you. I mean, this is your home. You can't really overstate that. It's put on a smaller level. If people just came in your home, it's not that you kick them out, or you don't even have the authority to do that in this, but if you just said like, we're over capacity. Yeah. It's time for you to go home. I love you, but you need to go back to your home, or if there's too many of you, I can't hold this many in my house. Right. Like, is that somehow sinful? Is that showing animus or you don't do that?
I use that exact example.
Did you really? And they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. I was like, you know, this is like, we're called to obviously show hospitality, especially to those of the household of faith. Like okay. So I bring someone over for dinner. Like first off, say 10 come, or the example I use is like, say that they're there for like 5 hours. At like some point I'm like, well, you know, it's time for you to go home.
You start pulling out the idols. Let's do a ceremony right here in your house. It was like, no.
No, that's not hospitable, apparently. So
not hospitable.
You know what's funny to your point, John?
Mentioned.
So in the middle of all this, so Charlie dies on Friday. So a week goes by. So that's the third meeting is what I mentioned with my wife and at the church for a couple hours. On the Friday, I think it was that Friday. Yeah, I think it was that Friday. That's when the Trump administration actually did change some policies in regards to the H-1B visa. And yes, it looked like for a second that it was basically a nuclear, you know, it ruined it. It was basically untenable.
I had a friend.
Yeah, it's so expensive that it wouldn't work. It effectively did what it should do, you know.
Right.
And I had a friend actually who's like involved with the administration reach out to me and say, hey, like you really moved the needle on this. And funny enough, that was one of the first criticisms I had, right? So I sit down in the meeting and Matt and these other guys, there's other people, not to pick on Matt. But the criticism's like, do you really think, like, is this worth it? Is this really going to have an effect on things? I was like, well, I don't really, that's not really in my calculus. Like, and to your point, yeah, if I was an elder, like if I was a pastor, maybe I wouldn't necessarily delve into that discussion just because I'm like, I don't know, maybe it's just not, there's not a lot of prudence there or something, but I'm just a member of the church. who's bearing the brunt of this. But yeah, that was the main criticism. And so, yeah, I thought that was hilarious, actually, that I received that feedback. And so I did gloat a little bit on X.
Yeah, I would.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought you count with 300 followers? And I mean, this. So what inspired you to go public with all of this? That's kind of a rare thing, because I've had people even reach out to me in the past about Matt telling me he's woke. And I'm like, well, you got to give me some publicly available information, or you got to make a stink. And it's very rare for someone to do that, or maybe they don't know how, but you somehow have, there's a story on the blaze. So walk me through that. What was your,
So right off the bat, with the attacks on the business, that was of interest to several like newspapers and the surrounding area, including the Blaze. I got connected with the author, Sebastian, great guy. He reached out to me pretty early on, and he wanted to write about like the foreign attacks on an American business for speaking up against like the immigration policy, foreign entities affecting and delving into like an American policy discussion, right? And so he did a great job with that. That was awesome. That started the conversation, and from there. Yeah, the church. I talked to Sebastian when I was talking to him. I mentioned that like I was having a hard time with my church, and he said he asked me if he could write about it, and I was like, not at the moment, for sure, not while I'm a member of the church, and not while anything's going on, because I do, and I did have I told the elders I have a strong concern for the unity of the body, and I don't know where this is going. This needs to be dealt with, and Lord willing, it would just all be resolved peacefully, and it'd be like, no big deal, move on. And when it seemed like it was over with that, and it wasn't going to lead to like to telling me that I need to go to another church in the last meeting, everything was on hold. There's no article that's going to be posted or anything. That wasn't for anyone to delve into. It was only after the last meeting, which was the Wednesday night, the Wednesday night before my son was born. So my third son was born the 6 a.m. the next morning. It was only after that meeting that I was like, okay, like I feel like I am the guy to do this on behalf of other people. I'm willing to take that. I have the conviction. I've worked through this. I've worked through Christian ethics. I was in the meetings. Like I think I handled this truly like appropriately and like in God honoring. Like I don't feel like I sinned in any capacity. And in the end, I felt like I was, if anybody was gonna help move the needle for the next guy, or at least make it a heavier cost to even like rebuke someone or put them through anything like I was put through for the sake of something that the Bible, like God's word, doesn't really speak to. If anything, it speaks in my favor. And then you've got the neglect of like, obviously like the kind of the weightier matters of the law. You've got the Ten Commandments, we've got sin in the church, and in their words, the elders' words, this is something they've spent the most time on of any issue in the church. And I was like, well, that's concerning. Like, there's other issues in the church. We got, like any church does, but we have sin and that needs to be dealt with. We have too much on our hands to be creating sin, like creating sins, or applying sin of the, like in the world's eyes to the body. So I reached out to Sebastian, and he was super faithful to the story. Like frankly, like he held back on a lot of like some of the more critical elements of facts of the case. I didn't participate at all in writing the article, obviously. Sebastian, I think, painted by my interview the elders in the best possible light of the facts. I think he did a good job. It was faithful to do that. And of course, now the accusation is like, I'm sowing division and I've caused so much harm to the church. And I'm like,
we never really got to the point. Was it that Sunday night when your wife was in the meeting where they asked you to find another church?
No. So that Sunday night. So then it's, and then Wednesday night, the following week, after I posted a question. So things kind of seemed resolved. Then I mentioned before, and I probably got sidetracked, but a member sent me a King's Hall podcast clip that posted it directly. It was on the H-1B visa issue. And it had a quote, had a line in there that said something like, you know, what would get you in more trouble at your church? Like saying something that was like perceived as racist or maybe like heterodoxy on like, say, the Trinity. And, you know, if you err on the Trinity, you know, oh, he's a work in progress, like let's work with them, you know, all these things, right? On these primary issues. But if he touches anything that's deemed as racist, if he's perceived as racist by the world, then this is like, we need to get rid of him like right now. You know, this is like, we need, and actually the quote was, we need to have a meeting with the elders and their wives, which was literally my case.
It was your case.
And I wanted to like, you know, I was done. I was, and from my understanding, I was kind of out of the weeds on the disciplinary issue. But I was not, and I wasn't willing to say, hey, my elders did this to me, like, you know, whatever the deal was, because I was still a member of the church. But I did want to present to the elders, like, what I feel like is the underlying issue at hand, which was, to your point, like, we are putting emphasis and we treat heavily the sins of the world. And where there's tons of Christian liberty, I think, in terms of the application of God's word. Mm-hmm. But where there's clarity about clear commands of God and objective sins that are occurring, we think that's not a big deal. And we just need to like work with people, and we would never like send them through discipline.
Respectable sins.
Yeah.
So what position did you have in the church? Because I'm trying to figure out why they decided to spend more time on this than other issues.
So no official position. I led a community group. I was one of maybe like 12 community group leaders, but a larger community group. I coordinated the services as far as like with the welcome team, so hospitality stuff. It was one of four, like, you know, of the guys that did that. I read scripture every now and then, and I would say I was probably one of the more involved lay members at the church. Maybe there's a couple people who also would kind of be, and then led Bible studies and all that stuff. So I was involved.
You're on a ministry path though, right?
Yeah, it was, I had expressed to the elders, like, I want to be a pastor. I want to be an elder. I'd love to be a lay elder of a church. I kind of realized that was never going to happen. I fully expected that if that was a discussion for me at this church, I was going to tell them, I don't think you want me to be a pastor. I think you don't understand how, like, the disagreement that I'm going to have, as far as like, some of these issues. You know, I just was willing to like, I don't think you like, cause again, you know, to my point, to their point, I guess, in the meetings, I wasn't bringing like political discussions constantly into the pews and into my community group and all these things. Right. Like, I respected the elders enough to like where they weren't, you know, can have conviction on the things they didn't have conviction on. I wasn't willing to like make the church have convictions on. I was willing to kind of put aside a lot of political issues for the sake of just like, unity of the body and stuff. Now I look back on that and I obviously have learned my lesson, but,
I think you're like a lot of people who just, I mean, normal, average, decent, everyday guys. I don't mean average in a bad sense. Like you're above average and like your bravery and so forth. But I mean, you're just like wanting to more or less be left alone and live your life and run your business and pursue ministry. And it's sort of like a moment comes where, and you had it with just your community where it's like, I've lost my neighborhood. I've just lost, or I'm in the process of losing. And people who normally don't get that politically animated become politically animated because it's a natural instinct to protect your own. You feel violated. And I would feel very violated if I drove through my neighborhood And I saw a display like that, I think, and not having seen that before, wanting to prevent that from coming to my neighborhood, it would be sort of dystopian. I'd want probably comfort and direction from my pastor and how best to challenge that. It would be very discouraging to have what happened to you happen. So the story ends with a good ending, kind of, right? So even though you get kicked out of your gym, and I don't know if you've had other like altercations in public of people recognizing you. I'm assuming not, but
only positively. No, only positively.
Yeah. Have you had a good place to land? Are you at another church now? Do you have another gym?
So unfortunately, no. So like the way that it kind of resolved, or the way it kind of culminated, was that last meeting, you know, brought into both the elders, and was told that I'm not, you know, obviously not submitting to the elders. I need to go to another church. We need to protect the flock. You need to go. You're not welcome, you know, in as many different ways you can say you need leave. So there was no, I really wanted to. So technically our bylaws require like a vote. A vote of the elders would be discipline, like the removal. You actually don't bring them in front of the church, which is unfortunate. I think as a congregationalist, like, you need to bring them up to the church, you need to vote for them, but whatever. As Paul lays out in 1 Corinthians, dealing with the man who sleeps with his father's wife. So there wasn't necessarily a vote there. I should have kind of called for it. I was pretty nervous, pretty scared. as you're like tooting my horn of like how brave I am. I'm like, oh man, I was like sweating.
You got seven elders there questioning you. I mean, I think any of us would feel intimidated by that.
Very, very intimidated. But yeah, I mean, I expressed to them, like, if you're telling me to leave the church, I will do that. I'll leave the church. So, I went home. I told my wife. She wanted to talk about it. She goes into labor as we're talking about it, which is wild. I've never experienced anything like that. Our son's born at 6 a.m. in the morning, which is a delight. It was amazing. And what we wanted to do with the church was we wanted to just remain on the rolls, not given over like to the world, like not released into the world. We wanted to be released to the hands of another church as our covenant requires. We were just on the lookout for another church, but also we just had a baby. So we missed that Sunday, and it's going to take some time and finding a church that would receive us. So we hadn't found a church, and then the elders, made public, they met at the Sunday night service. They made public comments about our situation. They named us and said that we were not members anymore. And so I emailed real quickly to Matt. I said, hey, just want to clarify, like, we didn't ask to be removed as members, yet. We want to remain as members until we find another body. It was a miscommunication a little bit, but like my wife was asking about like getting us pulled off of Planning Center. It's like an app. We were just getting these updates and stuff about we didn't want that anymore. But we still want to be members. So I asked if we could just remain as members until then. No response. And then no response was given. This is like the third outstanding email at this point where they haven't responded to anything I've asked. And then at that point, I was like, well, we're not members anymore. Sebastian had written an article. I said, Sebastian, it's okay to go ahead and publish it. And then, of course, the accusations that I'm sowing division come flying.
Is that what they're doing now? Is that... Because that was just a few days ago. I mean, are they in real time? I mean, I'm assuming this podcast drops, they're gonna, I mean, possibly watch this and be upset. And
yeah,
I don't know. I just asked them to remember our sins. They are many, but His mercy is more.
True. great music. I mean, I love. Yeah, I do love Matt. I just to be clear, like, I love Matt. I forgive him. I just think
we've done that song at my church too. So yeah.
Yeah, anyway. I think that they were concerned. Clearly their concern was like the public image, and it was not the well-being of me or my family, especially my wife. That's the thing that I'm actually like a little frustrated about is they've put out a couple, like they read the statement Sunday night about how they've like counseled us. And I'm like, dude, you haven't counseled my wife at all. Like, to say counseling is crazy. My wife was totally thrown off to the, you know, I've received a ton of support. Guys reached out to me and they're like, you know, like yourself, you're like, hey, like, you know, thanks for being courageous. My wife is just like, she just lost all of her friends. She's like nursing a baby and she's just being left, you know, off to the side, which is extremely, you know, disappointing and sad. And then being asked to come in to the last meeting. And I'm like, she's due on Friday. You know, we have a meeting. They wanted to come in on a meeting on Wednesday. I'm like, she's not coming. I'm not going to have her come. She's not subject to any of this. That's just stress. We got to find a babysitter. It's not going to work. And they were adamant on her coming. And I was just like, she's not. This
is crazy.
She's not coming.
Yeah.
And she went into labor, you know, an hour later. So
it's so crazy to me, the level of seriousness that they're treating it. Has there been like an official statement from the elders publicly available, or is it just more like, is it behind the scenes? They're just saying things about you guys. I mean, what's the opposition?
Yeah. So the next day after that last meeting, they came to my community group and they secretly, no one said anything. It was obviously supposed to be quiet. They kind of gave their side of the story. But that was fine. I was like, okay, that's not really public. But they, on Sunday, this Sunday, October 5th, they read a public statement like to the membership, to the church, that was there. Anyone who came to the service or Sunday night.
They heard it.
Okay. And I have that. They emailed that to me. And then they've also sent me another letter after the article is posted. I can provide all that.
Yeah. Are they accusing? Yeah. So we'll send it to me. We'll put links for people who want to look at it in the info section for this video. Just summarize maybe, what are they saying? You're slandering them, or like, have you misrepresented them in their minds, or?
They're adamant that like, we didn't remove you. Expulsion is not true. And I'm like, and my response was,
this is weird.
You told me to go to another church. Like I know. And it was very clear to me, even in the last meeting, what they're trying to do is they want the effect. They want the end result. Daniel's gone. We don't want to go through, like, we don't want to like officially do this. We just want to like, we want to get it done. And I don't know how much more official it would be. I guess they'd have to like literally raise their hand or something. But the elders were there. They told me to go to another church. All elders except for one. And
you're not a member. I mean,
yeah, I'm not a member anymore. Yeah,
not a member. Okay. Yeah. So they did remove you.
Yeah. Right? They would say, so just to be clear, they would say because my wife asked to be like removed from the planning center thing, which we clarified, like, hey, we were not saying that. We were talking about like the notifications, but they never responded.
So there should be no problem reinstating you then.
So we asked to be reinstated, like, just like, just to be clear, like if you've removed us, like just reinstate us. Like, you know, we don't want to be left to the world. Like we want to move to another church. And, you know, they didn't respond until the article's posted. And then they say, obviously we're not going to do that. It's like, okay. I don't know. So the article itself doesn't say that I was expulsed or like, you know, that there was an expulsion. It actually just says that they brought me in. They formally asked me to leave, which is the most generous way you could possibly frame that. So it's entirely perfectly accurate. People understand when you're brought in front of all the elders and you're asked to leave the church that you're not welcome there anymore.
Yeah. That's a pretty good indication. So, you haven't found another church yet, but have you found another gym at least?
I have. And I have not told them about my issues. We won't say where that is.
Yeah. No, okay. We'll thanks. Keep that quiet.
We'll work out in peace.
Yes. I think so. And your business, is it doing okay? I mean, despite the bad reviews and everything, are you still able to make
it? Yeah. Yeah. It's doing fine. Yeah. It's doing good.
Good. Okay. So the prayer then out there for those listening, I think, is that you and your wife and your new baby, how many children do you have?
Now three.
Three, your third baby. Wow. Mm-hmm. So that you would find and be connected to a good church that can disciple you and shepherd you and do the things it sounds like that weren't happening, at least in the final stages at this particular church at the Trails. And I'm really sorry you went through that. That's really hard. I do respect your bravery and your willingness to warn others, not just about the church, but about this type of thing, because this is happening all over the place. I mean, I've obviously tracked some of this myself, and I think your attitude is outstanding. I mean, you're doing this because not because you're building a platform, you're not grandstanding, you don't have anything to gain, you have everything to lose, but you want to protect others, and that's a really noble thing. So Daniel, thanks for your bravery, thanks for being willing to talk about this, and let us know if there's anything else that we can do to help.
Yeah, thanks, Sean, I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Is there anywhere that you want to send anyone in our final moment here? Website, I don't know if you have a give send go or
I've got nothing. Twitter account plug. No, yeah, just my Twitter account, I guess. If you want to update, I'll probably, you know, if there's like a public statement from the elders, I'll just respond publicly. And
what's the handle for people to go?
DJ Keen One, KENE, Daniel Keen, KENE.
Okay, DJ Keen One. All right. Well, thanks, Daniel. God bless. Yeah.
Thanks, John. Appreciate it.